Welcome to Political Rewind. I'm Bill Nigut. On a very busy Monday afternoon, the legislature is in session downtown. They've only got a little more than 2 weeks left in the current session, and still some very hot bills that have yet to be decided. One of them took a very big step today. We're going to talk about that in just a minute. Before we do, let's say hello to the people who are in the studio with us today. It's Monday. Jim Galloway, the lead political writer for the AJC, is here. He also oversees the Political Insider blog at AJC.com. How you doing, Jim? Good weekend?
Too much yard work, but yeah. Otherwise, yeah.
Did you do any woodwork?
No.
You know, we should tell our listener, Galloway's grandfather was an extraordinary carpenter,
wood carver.
We've seen...
He carved cathedrals.
Hey, would you do us a favor? Would you forward to, say, Robert and Tom, it's not right this second, a photograph of at least one of your grandfather's works, and we'll post it on social media?
Mm-hmm. Sure.
So Galloway follows in his footsteps by... doing interesting woodwork. Sitting across from Jim in the studio today, Amy Steigerwalt, professor of political science at Georgia State University, and also overseeing the internship program down at the state capitol this session. Hi, Amy.
Hi, it's great to be here.
Yeah, glad to have you here. In fact, we're going to turn to you for some interpretive information about the abortion bill. The abortion bill, which passed a Senate committee today. We'll get to that in a minute. Howard Franklin, Democratic political consultant, joins us right now. Do you have candidates lined up for the 2020 cycle already, Howard?
Having a lot of those conversations, but no candidates lined up.
Okay.
It's going to be a clown crier sort of primary. I think we want to see a little bit of it shake out before jumping into the fray.
Got that. And next, Howard, is Leo Smith. He's a Republican political consultant. He formerly worked with the Georgia Republican Party, did minority outreach for them. How about you, Leo? You lining up clients for 2020?
I am selectively considering a couple of campaigns, but right now focusing on a voting rights commission, a national project, which I'll be sharing more about in the future as the partners clear up and the effort there gets more detailed.
Yeah, you told us a little bit about that off the record. We look forward to hearing how it all comes together. All right, let's start. Jim Galloway, an important morning at the Capitol. In the Senate Science and Technology Committee, chaired by Renee Unterman, last Thursday, just to set the stage, they had taken the first look and had a public hearing about the bill which would essentially outlaw abortion in Georgia. They called it a fetal heartbeat bill. At 6 weeks, once they detect a heartbeat, you are no longer allowed to have an abortion. She did not call for a vote on Thursday. She said, you know, let's give it a little time. Let's let people offer their thoughts, maybe if there's an amendment or two. But all of a sudden...
But at 8 a.m. this morning, which is kind of sort of pre-dawn, they held a very quick meeting. Democrats offered three amendments, and all were voted down, 3-2. It was a gender-oriented vote, three males versus two Democratic women. Renee Unterman, as chairman, did not have to vote.
And as legislators left the committee room, there was a crowd outside, many of them protesters against this motion, and it got loud. They're yelling, shame. And at another point, the crowd was yelling, no safe seat, which seems even more to the point.
Yeah, that's more of a threat. And that was that. And I'm sure as this debate was going on, every Republican was thinking about those shrinking number of suburban metro Atlanta seats.
So let's all get in a conversation about this. Amy, there was a time at which we thought perhaps that this bill was not going to end up really going anywhere this session. There were efforts to slow it down, even by the governor himself, who introduced legislation that would have left it up to the Supreme Court to decide whether Roe was constitutional or not. And only after that decision was made would Georgia take action. This feels like it got out of control, and it's heading towards passage in the Senate, we assume.
I think that there was an attempt to, so the trigger bill that you're referring to would have said that if the Supreme Court struck down Roe v. Wade, then incumbent upon the General Assembly passing a resolution that therefore would go into effect in Georgia law, a bill which completely outlawed abortion. This one was put in separately and would do it now, not waiting for Roe v. Wade, because the issue that it really bumps up against is sort of the practical effect that this bill, under current law and under current Supreme Court interpretations, is very clearly unconstitutional. It does not meet the parameters that are laid out in Roe or any of its progeny, and similar bills that have been challenged have been struck down. And so I think there was a concern of a number of people that one of the issues that you run into is that while this certainly makes a stand and says we are doing something on the issue of abortion for those that would like to outlaw it, it also is going to be one that is going to cost the state quite a lot of money to defend it, and they're going to lose unless something wildly changes in the scope of federal law. And so I think that was one of the reasons why people thought, at least politically, that the trigger bill made a bit more sense.
So before, let's not get ahead of ourselves. Leo, is this bill going to pass the Senate? Is there any reason to think that there are some Republicans in the Senate who might feel this isn't the best thing to do?
Well, I think that Republicans have already shown some willingness to be open and compromise. I know that the issue of rape incest was something that became altered, and Republicans are supporting that issue. I think you said something, Amy, that's just really key, and that is Governor Kemp wants to have something related to this bill passed. And so I think the senators are going to support a bill. This bill is going to get support.
Let me make sure. Yeah, are the exceptions still in the bill, to the best of our knowledge? In other words, incest.
Yes, okay.
Race, incest, and the life of the mother is in danger in instances of medical futility.
Right. The incest and the rape one is a little bit problematic. Because they both have to be supported by police reports filed within a certain window of time. And if you know anything about incest, that's not going to happen.
Yeah. Howard?
Yeah, I wish I could. I wish I had as much optimism about this piece of legislation as I think I've heard expressed in a couple different conversations. I am afraid that something may pass. As you guys have already noted, the governor has been really clear that he wants to pass likely the most restrictive abortion bill in the country. And I think if we're headed toward that, we're back on the precipice of the culture wars. And that's just not good for many of the stakeholders who are very active at the General Assembly.
Well, when you say we're headed back, given this bill, aren't we already in the middle of them once again? We haven't been in the middle. I mean, I suppose RFRA, the Religious Liberty Bill, has been an example of that.
True.
But this is even more intense by many, many multiples than RFRA, right?
I would agree. I think there's been a lot. Obviously, you guys are aware a lot of the progressive and women's focused advocacy groups have been stirring up the pot on this. You guys mentioned and played the protest. But I think hearing more from the business community that stood up time and time again when RFRA has been proposed is something else that I think those allies are looking for and expecting as this bill keeps marching toward a vote.
Yeah, it's what this does. This is different from RFRA because it gets at the Republican weakness that was displayed in November among female voters. RFRA, you're depending on the LGBT community and the business community to unite and form a constituency. With this one, you have an immediate constituency of 52%.
Yeah, yeah. Amy, how are women going to react to that? I mean, obviously, women are not a monolithic force. Nevertheless, I think it's fair to make some assumptions about how this bill hits women differently than it may hit many men.
Well, I think it is important to note that it doesn't really affect men all that much, whereas it affects women on a lot of a day-to-day basis. And so I do think that comes into play, and I do think that that captures one of the issues that we have really seen between the two parties recently, that on that women are not a monolithic group. Women, however, including Republican women, are much more likely to be pro-choice than their male counterparts. And I think we've seen some of that with the bills that are coming up. And there's also, I think, a couple of questions that are in the Senate substitution that haven't perhaps received a ton of attention, which I think will be very interesting. One of them, Jim and I were having a conversation earlier where I think it's possible it may be one of the first attempts to actually criminalize behavior by women. If I'm reading it correctly, it will lead to that if a woman uses a substance, which will lead to an abortion, which would cover medical abortion. So that's when you take a combination of two pills in order to induce an abortion, that would actually be covered as well by this bill. And so that is going to be something that I think is going to come up under this. And there's also a lot of other questions about what does it mean with sort of finding the heartbeat, about the determination of medical futility. Similarly, medical emergency, which is something that a lot of women have been concerned about. It's limited only to death or, quote, substantial or irreversible physical impairment of a major bodily function, which obviously would be a terrible thing. But the problem is that there's a lot of sort of major physical ailments that could happen that aren't actually covered in this. And so that can cause concern as well as to figure out what's going to go into this and also how it's going to affect doctors if they're consistently concerned about whether or not their determination will meet the legal standards, especially before they act in a way to try to save the mother's life.
I just, you know, there's no shortage of legislation that are going to give Republicans fits and starts in 2020, right? Like we're talking about this. This sounds very, very bad, and there's a lot of reasons that it shouldn't go forward. But I should also mention, you guys have talked about this before, Senate Bill 150, which would prohibit domestic abusers from being able to use firearms, hasn't advanced through the House. Roger Bruce has a bill, I think it's House Bill 90, that would actually look at supplier diversity for Department of Administrative Services, DOAS. And I've seen a number of women.
And that bill is not going anywhere.
Not gone anywhere yet, no. And a number of women and a number of groups have also been tweeting and sharing on social media about the fact that Georgia has the highest rate of maternal mortality in America. And the fact that instead of addressing some of these serious health issues in a legislative session like this one where healthcare has risen to the fore, we're doing House Bill 41.
You know, Leo, it's interesting to me. We talk all the time about the fact that Donald Trump has decided to play out his administration, all of his policies, all of his pronouncements for his base, and has never tried for a second to expand beyond that. It strikes me certainly the fetal heartbeat bill and perhaps some of the other measures that Howard just mentioned are examples of the same thing suddenly happening in the Georgia legislature where Republicans are in control, playing strictly to the base. And one of the things that's fascinating to me about that is we know that Brian Kemp ran a very conservative governor's race, probably smart. I mean, he played to the base there and mobilized that base. But then we got this sense when he came into office, you know, people said Brian Kemp is much more moderate. He's kind of in the same mold as Nathan Deal, run to the right, govern in a more centrist way. And then this comes along, and it's all focused on the base and seems to me doesn't have much room beyond a very narrow constituency for support.
Yes, I think what we see developing.
Am I right about that?
Yeah, no, I think you're right. I think you're spot on. And I think that what we're seeing is a story of the tried and true. When someone feels threatened, you know, generally they go to their go-to pitch in a baseball game. The go-to pitch for Republicans has been some of these hardcore wedge issues. Donald Trump has demonstrated that. I think Governor Kemp, he campaign on this issue, on this bill.
Yes, he did.
It is there. It is actually awakened a religious right that has been somewhat apathetic of late, in part because of people like Donald Trump and in part because they just haven't found anything to get on fire for. This is one that will insert some fire into the electoral process here in Georgia. And I think they're riding on that in face of the demographic changes that look like the numbers are starting to trend towards a blue state. So you look for something that is a hot hotly debated issue that people really are committed to, and this issue is one of them. In the same way that on the other side, the voting rights issue is also a big issue.
Yeah. Jim, you want to jump in?
Well, it's just the only thing I would add here is building on what Howard was saying, is that you've got a major problem with attracting doctors into parts of rural Georgia. And what the bill as it's written right now puts a lot of onus on what doctors do in what their relation what treatments they give women who are expecting. And you know, there's a like many other abortion bills that have passed the legislature, this one kind of uses the civil courts as it weaponizes the civil courts. Because in this bill, a woman who undergoes an abortion can thereafter sue the physician for compensation for a human being's life that began at 6 weeks.
I have a hard time even wrapping my head around the convoluted thinking.
The fear on this is it's going to be hard to get it's going to become harder for doctors to do their practice and get insurance in Georgia.
All right, so let me ask you a very simple question, Amy, because I haven't understood this from the start. The bill says that upon detection of a heartbeat, it essentially says it's a personhood bill. Mm-hmm. It essentially says that embryo, that fetus, rather, is now a person and cannot be aborted because that would be murder.
Yes.
I mean, it doesn't say that in the statute, but that's essentially what we're talking about here. Once you become, the heartbeat is... All right. So, and we know from all the talk we've had about this that heartbeats and fetuses are usually detected around the 6 week mark.
That's the earliest point it can be detected.
Right. But that's also why this virtually outlaws abortion.
Exactly.
Because, you know, the heartbeat is determined pretty early in the pregnancy. Okay. So how do you, is the language in there such that that you can't perform an abortion in a clinic if you detect a heartbeat? How is that going to work? Do you know? How is this working? In other words,
yes.
A woman goes to the clinic and asks for an abortion. The personnel in the clinic detect a heartbeat. At that point, they are prevented from aborting the fetus. Is that how this works?
Yes.
Okay.
With some very few exceptions. One of them being if you rape and incest, if you have filed a police report. What they do carve out is the use of all of these procedures in the case of a spontaneous abortion, which is a miscarriage, right? So that's the technical term for a miscarriage. Or in the case of ectopic pregnancies, which is where it's on the outside, and that can be incredibly fatal. But otherwise, the emergency or for medical futility, but otherwise it has that, or if there is that final sort of medical emergency, but that medical emergency is really in sort of a very dire thing. Either I have to have organ failure or the mother is going to die. And otherwise, yes, this is explicitly saying that for any other instance, for any other reason, even if you think, for example, there could be medical harm to the mother, but it's not going to result in... Right. Impairment of a major bodily function or death, it would not be allowed.
I have a question related to that. So one would assume that the day after, you know, you would not expect a heartbeat the day after from the embryo, fetus, whatever you want. So therefore, with that 72-hour day after, quote unquote, pill that's out there, would we expect to then therefore see more use of that?
So it actually is also covered in this bill because the bill explicitly talks about using, it's not just about various procedures. It actually also says an abortion is
chemical.
It covers using a substance, right? Which I would imagine would cover chemical. And so that's also why it has the possibility of also not only criminalizing the behavior of the doctor, but also of the woman if she's engaging in the medical abortion, because she would be the one who's actually using the substance, which would be the pills.
All right. So there are so many implications to this. And I know, Mr. Galloway, that you are working on a column that's going to lay out, with Amy Steigerwald being involved with you,
we're even taking more of the details of this.
All right. Yeah. So, right. Will, your column will appear in the Wednesday paper. It will be online sometime tomorrow. In the meantime, we're going to see an immediate stay. We're going to see immediately any number of people, organizations, whatever, go into federal court once this bill is signed by the governor, assuming all that happens, calling for a stay. And because of the history of the courts in terms of abortion restrictions, we expect a stay would be granted. So nothing is really going to change in terms of abortion for the time being.
No, but do remember that this kind of legislative measure is designed in part to become a vehicle for judicial disputes.
Sure, that's my point, Howard. That they're looking forward. I mean, we've heard Republicans in the legislature actually say it would be great if Georgia is the case that goes up to the Supreme Court. And it's the Georgia case that decides the constitutionality of Roe.
You know, we've already had quite a bit of time in the spotlight the last 2 years in politics. I don't know how much more the state's going to be able to stand. But yeah, I've heard that argument as well, and I don't know that I think it'd be a good thing.
Amy?
Yeah. Well, I think it is actually important to note that if the bill passes, it means that in fact the status quo changes. The law will change, and even if it's stayed, it means that the status quo is not able to be implemented and enforced, but this still remains the status quo unless and until it's changed by the court. So that really does sort of shift things and, again, sets it up, right, again, to have to be sort of looked at in the court, because otherwise it would, in fact, be implemented. And it means starting to change the landscape of what it means. I mean, Jim brought up the point of doctors deciding to move into areas, particularly those that are OBGYNs. There are a lot of areas of Georgia that do not have any counties that do not have any OBGYNs that practice within them. And this, again, can sort of raise another level for that.
All right, we got to get to a break. But before we do the political side of this, Leo, one of the chants that the people who were up there in the committee, the anti-bill people, were yelling was no safe seat. Is that right? Are we going to see during the 2020 cycle a lot of challenges in legislative races, more and more resources poured into defeating incumbents who supported this measure?
Indeed, I think as Howard was pointing to, Georgia's already in that sort of environment. That is now the atmosphere that is here. This is going to be more of a swing state. We're going to see a lot more money coming from national committees to the state, and also these advocacy groups are going to be playing a big role in politics in Georgia in the future.
All right. We will watch how this proceeds. We're not quite sure when the Senate. Again, Jim, I've said this before. If I'm the president of the Senate, the lieutenant governor, or the chair of the Rules Committee, or one of the leaders of the Senate, I would be saying to my people, could we please vote this quickly? We do not need days and days of people protesting in front of the chamber.
Well, we did have Jeff Duncan, the lieutenant governor and president of the Senate, saying that he anticipated a vote by the end of this week.
All right, we'll watch how it develops. Let's do this. Let's get to our first break of the show. When we come back, got a lot more to talk about on today's Political Rewind.
You know, selling a car can be a hassle, but donating it is a whole different story. Let us take it off your hands or off your driveway and turn it into public radio and maybe even a tax deduction. Hi, I'm Kai Rizdahl, the host of Marketplace, and here is how to donate.
Call 877-GPB-1-CAR or donate securely online at gpb.org/cars. And thanks.
Sandra Day O'Connor, the first woman on the Supreme Court, liked to say, "It's good to be first, but you don't want to be the last."
She knew that all eyes were on her, that everyone was watching her, and if she screwed up, she was going to screw up for women for all time.
The triumph and tragedy of the woman who has been called the unfeminist feminist, this afternoon on All Things Considered from NPR News.
It's 4 till 7 today on GPB and online at gpbnews.org.
Jim Galloway, the Sunday AJC had a long investigative piece, really terrific reporting. I won't try to get deep into the weeds on it. So just at the basics of the story, which relate to the state's takeover or attempt to take over the airport during this legislative session, in my opinion, the basics of the story are that after she was elected as mayor-elect during that brief period
2017.
Between the election day and her swearing in, Keisha Bottoms wanted to secure salaried positions for a number of top staffers on her campaign, including Marva Lewis, who had been her campaign manager. And she wanted to get them, get some money to them. She wanted to make sure they had pay of
right,
some
now this,
sort.
This is something that's usually taken care of through campaign contributions.
Exactly. But in this case, according to the reporting that your team did, what she did was put them on salary, was able to get them salaried positions through the city payroll. And the one that really stands out is Marva Lewis, who was a very effective campaign manager for Keisha Bottoms and was her chief of staff initially, was a job as deputy chief of Hartsfield-Jackson Airport.
Deputy GM,
$280,000 a year job.
$273,000 a year job.
I'm just rounding
up. And she was only in that position for the weeks after the election to maybe 2 weeks beyond the transition. The total amount paid to her appears to have been $22,500, and we kind of know this because the mayor's office reimbursed the airport for that money.
My understanding, and if I got this wrong, please correct me, that they reimbursed the airport after your reporters began asking questions about how Marva Lewis was getting paid.
Right. And this is, you know, revenue from the airport is supposed to stay at the airport. That's a big no-no. There was apparently the FAA is already investigating a case, previous case during the Reid administration, where some airport revenue may or may not have been used to pay some legal bills arising from the grand jury investigations, and this could be another one. We're not, you know, the word we're using is improper. We're not saying it's illegal yet, and so we're not there. What's interesting, though, is that this afternoon, as we're talking, you have Mayor Keisha Lance Bottoms at the state capitol having a tete-a-tete with House Speaker David Ralston and Minority Leader Bob Trammell.
Okay, so I want to open this up to the panel, but this would be bad enough. And in fact, one of the reasons we all know about this is that one of the senior campaign advisors, Charlie Statlander, refused to take one of these positions because he thought it was improper, and he went to the feds.
Right.
So we've already got the feds deep into an investigation of the Kasim Reed administration, and now there's at least the beginning of something. We don't know. They may decide there's nothing really here, but at least they are apparently starting to look at it a little. It would have been bad enough if it had been involved with any other department, but Howard, at the same time that the state wants to take over Hartsfield, Marva Lewis's job was being assistant deputy GM at Hartsfield-Jackson.
Yeah, a lot of us who've been watching this process have, you know, looked at it and thought that the timing has just been terrible for the city. Obviously, with this happening at the state legislature and it moving through the legislative process, and you know, a number of negative news stories coming out, not just this one, but others in the last week.
Well, B.J. Pack had a news conference in which he revealed an indictment against contractor bribery case. And that contractor had at least one big construction project at Hartsfield.
That's right.
Although most of his, he was not a vendor at the airport.
Right, correct. You know, also, as we are sitting in the studio happening right now, Atlanta City Council is meeting. I don't know that we've had an open forum with members of council since this news story broke. I heard rumors of it last week, but I don't know how widely it had been talked about until it was published. I imagine that from the day as today, we will hear some members of council proposing additional oversight, additional checks and balances on a number of things that the administration and the airport are able to do in response to a lot of the news we've seen the last 2 weeks.
So, Leo, we know that the speaker has been skeptical about moving forward this measure for the state takeover. The Senate passed it, sent it across the way to the House. And it's interesting that Galloway tells us that the mayor's meeting over there today. Do we think that there's going to be any momentum to push this thing forward? Or is this just a blip on the radar because the speaker realizes there's no point in trying to take over the airport?
Well, I mean, I think we have to consider, you know, any type of work being done by BJ Pack, and then and I think they're taking that into consideration. But I think this is stating the importance of transparency, about integrity and the governmental processes, about spending, and you could, this is going to get pushed to the point where even if there is no takeover, there will at least be a continual transparency issue open, just like Felicia Moore, city council chair, did for the city of Atlanta, where she formed that whole transparency system. I think something of that effect is going to come out of this, which conservatives will feel better about.
What, again, you know, the speaker, Amy, has said all along, give me a reason we should take over. I haven't seen a legitimate one yet. I get that there have been some problems at the airport. This Marva Lewis thing isn't really about the airport. It's about the city, nevertheless. Right. I find it so. What's a state oversight committee going to look like? And what are they going to do?
I'll admit that when it comes to the substantive details of the currently pending Senate bill, I'm a bit confused about what it in fact is meant to do, particularly because we have previous determinations both by the FAA and federal courts that stipulate such a state takeover isn't possible. Right. The contract with the FAA is actually with the city of Atlanta. This was a similar thing was done, and I think they had tried to do it in Charlotte.
Yep.
That failed. That was a couple years ago. And so unless the city of Atlanta agrees to the takeover or agrees to a amendment to the ownership, the bill doesn't have any effect in that purpose. And so I'll admit that I'm a little confused about where it's
going. Well, that's what I was sort of getting to, that the offensive from Mayor Bottoms' position now being forced by the Republicans, the offensive on her side is to go create a compromise. Maybe this is a negotiation for allow us to have more oversight by your own agreement.
This again, this is where I'm going to say Leo's being a bit more optimistic than I am about the intentions of the Republicans who propose this legislation. I think this is, even if it were to pass, it'd be a Pyrrhic victory for the Republican Party underneath the Gold Dome. It's not going to actually manifest in any sort of oversight. And I think if we started from a place where we said we see some issues and we want to discuss
the city,
if the state legislature said we see some issues that we would like to address, as opposed to jumping all the way off the bridge at the word takeover, maybe there could be some common ground.
So, Jim, are you getting any reading from people down there that the speaker could be persuaded that the House ought to act on this bill? Or is he? Do you get the sense that he still stands pretty firmly behind
we know that the bill has, once it passed the Senate, the bill was referred to the House Rules Committee.
Yeah, where those things can die there very easily.
But this is very important because it wasn't sent to the House Transportation Committee. It wasn't sent to the Judiciary Committee. Or any number. The Rules Committee is that's where the core of the House Republican leadership is. What that tells you is the Ralston wants very, very direct control over that bill and where and when it moves.
All right. So this gets into the weeds a little, but it's worth talking about. If it's now in the Rules Committee, so the Rules Committee could vote to put it on the calendar.
Oh yes,
without any other committee being involved at all.
Right, but you've got to assume that your Rules Committee chairman is your most loyal soldier for David Ralston.
So for people who don't follow the legislature as closely as some people at this table do, most of you, typically, say the bill had gone to the Transportation Committee. They would have had to vote on it. If they'd voted it out, it would have had to win a spot on the rules calendar. That's a second step.
Right.
In this case, if the Rules Committee votes it out, it's going to end up on the calendar.
Right.
There's not going to be any other thing holding it back.
And what's more is that it could also be amended. in the Rules Committee, which means its contents would be very much controlled by the Speaker.
Howard, how is the mayor doing with all this? The mayor, I'm having a very hard time, and I think a lot of people are, at least there's conversation, about the fact that she had said this is like a war and was out of town for, I think, the first week when all of this was really going down at the Capitol. She's now over there with the Speaker, which is, you know, but it's hard to get a read on whether it's been wise of her to not be public about this, not be out there, except for a couple comments. And maybe is she working it quietly behind the scenes? Is she overmatched here? What's your sense of all this?
What I would say to start is that this was always going to be a tough challenge for the administration, the entire city. This line of proposals started when Hartsfield-Jackson was without a general manager, right? In addition to that fact, you've had a number of folks try to stand in the gap. So when the mayor hasn't been available, you've had a number of council members, Council President Felicia Moore in particular, but other members have also testified in committee. I do think the city could present potentially offer a more aggressive defense here, but I also have to acknowledge that again, and I go back to Leo's comment, this is not, we didn't sit down and say, let's have a negotiation about how we could ensure that the economic engine of the state runs more efficiently or is free of corruption. By the way, none of the issues that we're hearing about actually take place at the airport, right? When we're talking about procurement, that's a city hall function. Right. And the mayor and council have made a number of legislative and policy decisions to try to address some of those things. But all that said, I do think there's a feeling that people want to see more from our mayor. They want it's not a knock or a step back from what we've seen from council, but she's popular. People want to see her making the case for why this should not go forward.
All right. So that bill is still pending out there. I want to do a quick kind of lightning round before we go to a break and talk very briefly about a few bills that got attention from us, certainly on Political Rewind, but also in other media outlets around the state. Whatever happened to is what we're calling our lightning round. Jim Galloway, hate crimes bill. That bill passed the House. It would have been an enhancement.
Crossover day, right.
Mm-hmm. Right. It was not about freedom of speech. This was if you committed a crime and there appeared to be an element of prejudice, bigotry, hatred involved, there'd be a phase of the trial for an enhanced penalty to prove that it's a hate crime.
Right.
What happened to it?
Supported by prosecutors, Chuck F. Strachan of Tukula was a Republican, was the sponsor of the bill. It passed the House, I think, with six votes to spare. Yes. It was a close one.
Yep.
And it had the it's the first piece of legislation passed by either chamber to include sexual orientation as a protected class. That's important. It got referred to the Senate Judiciary Committee. I checked with F. Strachan very, very recently, like within the last couple hours. It has no hearing has been scheduled for it. I would think that what has happened in the Capitol over the last, say, 10 years is that the Senate has become the more ideologically motivated portion of the chamber.
And you're saying sexual orientation is the troublesome passage, as it has
always
been
has
for
been.
Years.
Always has been. Mm-hmm.
All right. So, Amy, we remain, if in fact it doesn't move, we remain one of only five states in the country that do not have some kind of hate crimes bill law.
Yes.
Okay. anybody?
I think it's also very interesting that one person voting against it was fellow Republican to Chuck F. Strachan, Sherry Gilligan, right? And her district looks very different, you know, with 79% white and 2.3% black. I think that, again, this is about who controls the message based on some of the demographic trends they see developing. And it's interesting that Chuck would be moving so forth.
I see this a little differently. I mean, a lot of the same Republicans who've advanced the airport takeover bill like to call our attention to the fact that only two major airports in the country are not run by an authority or don't have some degree of regional oversight and are just run by the city hall.
Wait, are you back at the airport?
I'm just going to make a comparison here. I'm making the comparison
that
a lot of the folks who brought those points up seem to be oblivious to the fact that Georgia is one of only five states without a hate crime bill.
I apologize.
No problem.
I suddenly thought I wasn't quite sure where you're heading with that. All right. The tampon tax bill, an effort, Amy, to remove tax from female hygiene products. Jan Jones, one of the leaders of the State House, said, I don't think we should pass this thing. And they didn't. Was there a good reason for this measure? And why does this thing go down in defeat?
Well, on the argument for it, the reason that people are putting it in is that it's a tax which is under the auspices of those that are supporting the bill to remove it, is a tax that applies to a medical device, and it's one of the only medical devices in the country that has a tax applied to it. And so we're talking about tampons and pads that are used during menstruation, right? Other devices that people use on a daily or weekly or monthly basis, such as diabetic tools and things like that, are not covered. Like, they're not taxed separately. And so it's getting at that. And it also is connected to sort of broader movements to make sure that these, you know, medical devices are being applied or given to women in other areas, such as in the Department of Corrections. So that's actually is a big change that has been done, is that the Department of Corrections is now going to ensure that women are given pads. They used to have to buy them out of their own thing. As to why there are others fighting against it, there's a lot of different arguments. I mean, some of it is that there is an argument of that it takes away revenue from the state, and perhaps that's not a good place to be taking it away. There's also sort of the questions of how it is that those monies should be applied and whether or not, right, how far this should be spread over. But I will admit, as someone who, of course, has to pay this tax, I would really rather not for something that's necessary.
But, of course, here's what's the bigger issue here in the larger context. This is the kind of legislation that's introduced when suddenly you have more women
in the
legislature.
It is. And I think that's a big shift that we're seeing. I mean, there's a ton more women, and it's, in fact, something that you can point to, which, to be perfectly blunt, I'm a little surprised, because it seems like low-hanging fruit of how do you get upset about the idea that there's an unnecessary tax put on 52% of the population every single month? And, hey, I'm fighting for all of you, and it seems pretty nonpartisan on some level.
Bill, there's another bill. I believe it passed the House on crossover day. Sharon Cooper was a sponsor, a Republican out of Marietta, that would bar the shackling of mothers, imprisoned mothers, while they are being delivered of their children.
Is it moving?
I believe it passed the House.
Okay.
I don't know what its fortune is in the Senate.
And that corresponds with, also correlates with, the First Step Act that Doug Collins got passed in Congress too.
Mm-hmm. Right? All right. Same thing. To round out the issues that relate to women, the Equal Rights Amendment was brought up in this session of the legislature. Georgia never did ratify the ERA. There's only, I think, how many more states? Three more states or something like that necessary, Howard?
Sounds right.
That went nowhere either. So these are measures that women are especially interested in. It's telling that with more women in the legislature, these things would come up, but they haven't gotten very far.
They haven't gotten far in the legislative discussions, but you will hear them bandied about come 2020 and before. I think not only in the general elections that we're going to talk so much about, but also in many of the primaries, where I think people are looking for and hankering for more progressive leadership, or more inclusive leadership, I should say.
I got to get to our final break of the show. We'll be back in just a minute with a lot more on Political Rewind.
On the next Fresh Air, life and death on Rikers Island. Dr. Homer Venters spent 9 years as head of New York City's Correctional Health Services, where he oversaw the care of thousands of inmates. He details horrific cases of inmate deaths from beatings and neglect, and describes some hard-won institutional changes that improved things, some. He has a new memoir. Join us.
Fresh Air is this afternoon at 3 on GPB and gpbnews.org.
Touchdown, John Nelson here from GPB Sports, reminding you that in Georgia, the four seasons are not winter, spring, summer, and fall. It is football, spring football, Cruton, and National Signing Day. On the Football Fridays in Georgia podcast, we'll tell you the stories on and off the field. Subscribe at gpb.org/sports and wherever your favorite podcasts are found.
Jim Galloway has more on the Sharon Cooper.
Yeah, this is House Bill 345. It did pass on crossover day on March 7th. It has been referred to a Senate committee, and it has not moved.
And this would prohibit the state in prisons from shackling women during childbirth.
Right,
inmates.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah.
Tomorrow's election day in a number of venues. Let me go over a little bit real quickly for those of you listening from across the state. Here in Atlanta, there is a special election to fill the vacancy of City Councilman Ivory Lee Young Jr., who died of cancer. Cherokee County is electing a new commissioner in one of their districts. Clayton County, the schools are looking for a SPLOST. It's a penny sales tax that they want to use to raise some $280 million and more over the next 5 years. They've got a long list of things they want to do with their schools for that. They want to, among other things, create a career academy, college prep academy, give preschool to some of their kids who haven't had it, all of that sort of thing. Snellville residents are going to decide on whether to support the Sunday brunch bill. Here's to Snellville. I want to go out and have Sunday morning brunch in Snellville. And Jim, the big one, Gwinnett County. Tomorrow is the final. It is election day. And right now, this bill to this referendum to enact a 1 cent sales tax to expand MARTA is right on the brink.
Right. Yeah. And this is a lot of people are calling this the most important MARTA vote since 1974. Because it raises the possibility of MARTA moving into geographic territory that has shunned it twice before.
All right. Anybody have a sense of where this is going? Or either you, Leo, or Howard, are you working on this at all?
I was just talking to some advocates and some pollsters out in Gwinnett, and they were saying that, you know, at one point they were thinking this was going to be a pretty significant turnout around 30%, but now they're seeing early vote turnout at 40%, and that these are the more conservative voters that tend to be coming out. So it's not looking real good for this vote.
The demographics, Howard, on the early vote are all much older voters.
Let me just point back to the decision that was made to move this to a March 19th vote instead of keeping it where it deserved to be in November of last year.
All right. Amy?
I would say the one thing, if you look at sort of the early vote turnout, that Brenda Lopez had said this a while ago, that she thought we would really see the numbers tick up once multiple early voting locations opened up, that we would start to see that. But I think the other side of it is, you know, and perhaps not surprisingly, right, the early votes are tending much older. In fact, it's almost 70% of the vote is those who have turned out so far over the age of 50. So it does suggest that you're seeing, a very small sort of segment of the population that's engaging in early voting. So it's hard to tell what that means.
You did have the Go Gwinnett forces. They're the advocates of the referendum on Friday. They kind of rolled out their two heavy hitters. They had on both sides of the spectrum. They had a radio ad with an endorsement from Stacey Abrams for the vote, and then on the other side, you had Eric Erickson of WSB radio fame.
A marriage around MARTA between
yes.
Stacey
yep.
Abrams and Eric Erickson. Who would have ever thunk it? Hey, Jim Galloway. Speaking of Stacey Abrams, she gave a long interview to Dan Balls, the Washington Post, Dan being one of the premier political reporters in journalism today, and she kept open this notion that she may run for president.
Yeah. And the one thing interesting there, I thought, and I saw it on Sunday, and she was. Kind of touting her foreign policy expertise.
Yeah, where did that come from?
She's got a permanent membership on the Council of Foreign Affairs up in New York.
Where's she going, Howard?
Well,
come on, you're a Democrat.
I don't know the answer to that question, but obviously there's a lot, not only just a Democrat, someone who's worked for her. I think she will certainly keep all these options open. I mean, with Beto jumping into the race, and I think another good friend, Andrew Gillum, who just lost a close governor's race in Florida, making an announcement on Wednesday, I expect a lot more fireworks for the next several weeks.
There's a really important tidbit here, Bill, that we haven't kind of put where we haven't put two and two together is that Joe Biden, he's the last big shoe to drop in the Democratic presidential race. There are reports that he is contemplating, he knows he's going to be at a disadvantage in this large field. He's contemplating naming a vice presidential candidate.
And he and Stacey Abrams met recently.
Yes, they
did.
We
haven't talked about it. It's been out there. We just haven't gotten around to it. And I don't know, Amy, The notion that if you're Joe Biden at his age, and I'm right up there with him, so I'm not, you know, casting any aspersions on him. If he were to name a young, energetic, attractive
45-year-old,
an African-American woman, Stacey Abrams, man, you know, that might be a reason to not run for Senate against David Perdue.
It not only, I mean, it's very real for Biden. I mean, so Biden's met with her. I mean, let's also note that so has Elizabeth Warren, Kirsten Gillibrand,
Kamala Harris,
many of them. But
Klobuchar.
She brings in an amazing ground game in a swing state. And also, particularly for Biden, he's facing a lot of concerns about his past stances, especially on issues of criminal justice and things like that, and having someone who is unabashedly progressive on his ticket with him might allay some of those concerns, especially with younger voters. But
it would be very interesting because I think considering Biden's gift for the gaffe, it would be probably the first vice presidential candidate that gets more airplay than the presidential candidate.
We will watch that. We've been promised, I shouldn't say promised, but initially, Abrams thought by the end of March she was going to decide what she would do, whether it was running for Senate against David Perdue or whatever else. Now she's saying apparently early April. So we'll watch and see how that develops, Howard.
Going to be exciting.
I have to acknowledge that the notion of her running for president at first seemed far-fetched. And the more you think about it, why shouldn't she aspire to higher office? Why? She's been incredibly successful here. She lost, of course, but lost by a very small margin, and ran the kind of race that Democrats have been looking for forever. Maybe it makes perfect sense for her to want to aspire
for higher office. I think she's also broken a number of other records and become a history maker in other spaces before even running for this.
All right.
Why not?
We're about to run out of time. Amy, keeping with the theme of women, which we talked about with some in some detail during the show today, Beto O'Rourke, he announced for president. He went to a cafe in Iowa, got up on a table or a counter, and CNN and MSNBC carried the entire, what was a nothing more than the kind of event that every candidate does when they go to Iowa or New Hampshire, carried the entire thing live. Vanity Fair puts him on the cover, and there are female candidates like Kamala Harris out there. I haven't heard her say it herself, but there are people who are supporting those female candidates who are saying, oh, really? It's the white guy who gets all this attention?
Studies have shown that men, and particularly white men, are much more likely to get favorable coverage, that they're much more likely to have attention given to their policy positions, that women have to fight much more for that coverage. And it is notable that there were very early on 4 women who put in, and if you look at the coverage that's been given, their coverage compared to Beto and Biden has been incredibly small.
Yes, well, of course, you can say the attention hasn't necessarily served him well. He made quite a few gaffes in the first rollout weeks. All right, we're out of time today. Thank you, Amy Steigerwalt, Howard Franklin, Leo Smith, and Jim Galloway. You'll be back. I'll see you on Friday when Doug Jones, U.S. Senator from Alabama, is going to be joining us for the show. Thanks to all of you. We'll be back here again tomorrow at 2 o'clock for another Political Rewind.